Keeping stanky, baby.
It's not easy right now, is it?
Now, off the water. To be honest with you, it has been the roller coaster of roller coasters. Was supposed to be out there today, but it was like time. It's like you're trying to hit the windows and you're trying to hit the temperature, and it's like if I break one more reel this week.
Really?
I've crushed. I haven't even sent you. I have crushed some hogosaurs. There's been a good podcast listener, good pal of mine. He was in the boat, got a PB, and then a couple other big. I've just freaking dialed in, but it goes. Oh, and the temp's falling off the. It's kind of crazy because the temps are all over the place. They can't even gauge them, and it's. I haven't felt my thumb in about 3 days, which is not normal. So other than that, yeah, it is what it is.
Yeah, you were saying, you know, you had pretty much coldest water temps like way below normal this time of year.
I have seen 39. So, and it's only going to get worse, which to be honest with you, it's not the typical wet and soggy most days. I mean, you know, I swung up to, I had a little business to take care of there. So I was up in your neck of the woods there for a minute and then came back and went, okay, it's like 10 degrees up here, but your 10 degrees feels like when it's 30 here, right? And it's a humidity thing, a lot of it. So just dealing with that cold water period. So I'm seeing 41. I saw 39 in an isolated area. So like 42 some days, just that superficial read. But you know, kind of the yeah. if you're taking all the transducers on the boat and kind of go, where are we at? 41 to 39 is where it's at.
Yeah, and us folks up here in the, you know, upper Midwest are going, oh, poor baby, you know, oh, come on, you know,
it's just his like, water's cold.
From where you are living, yeah, it's just colder than normal.
Colder than normal as far as those water temps. I actually threw up an article, Eric. It'll be on the app in a day or two. Mm-hmm. Just some observations because, you know, as a Southern guide, you know, I split my time here. It's like I cut out of here once it gets hot. I'm up there at the Busky Shop Bash, you know, spend some time there. And then I'm up in Canada fooling around. And, you know, it's just a different dynamic where I've had years here where, and people up north are going to vomit when I say this, I've had years where it didn't drop below like 54, right? You're like, yes, it is just like, oh, right. Would you crazy. Like the year, the Fatty Slammer Minnow came out, right? It was mild. It was ridiculous. You actually got me one of the prototype Fatty Slammer Minnows. I was catching muskies in January on that thing because they were still stayed shallow. And it really goes to a lot of what Danny, you know, was it Danny last week? Whatever.
Yeah, Danny Herbeck.
He's kind of forgettable. Sorry. But
he'd love to hear that.
Yeah, he is. But who were we talking about again? But the the scenario really being is like that there is a pretty dynamic shift in the when, where, what, and how. You know, below those certain water temperatures. So you've got to make that transition. And, you know, you might be fishing Kentucky, you might be fishing some open water here or there, or, you know, whether it be Pennsylvania or what you got there, or, you know, even your tiger muskie guys, right? And we've got we get plenty of messages, and I get plenty of hits from those kind of people. And yeah, you've got some open water in some unique places. But if you have colder than usual temperatures, you're going to have to adjust for that. So just goes back to the old adage about you can't fish the calendar. So I got an article coming on the app later this week, just some thoughts on that of like, what are the core components of what to think about and what to consider.
Good. Okay.
You know, other than that, Jay, it's a heck of a day to have a pro staff deal. It's a heck of a day. You know, we're coming up. It's show season, and we're going to be running some sales. Correct, Jay? What's going on? We got some show callers ourselves. Looks like we got some of the meeps.
We do. Yeah, the meeps. Meeps. Yeah, if you're interested, get them before they're gone, because most of them are gone already over the weekend. Meeps did what they call a small batch thing on 8 different musky killers, giant killer, and some MEPS 5s, just some specialty custom colors that they've been advertising a lot. And so those went over really well.
Yeah.
The new, my 2026 new musky gear video is done. And yeah, I loaded her up this morning. So that's going on YouTube tomorrow at noon. So
nice.
Be sure to check that out. It's pretty cool. It's covering stuff that is absolutely brand new that nobody's seen. Literally, there's one bait that I did where I'm like, I'm reading off I printed an email.
Because
it's like, okay, he settled on the name an hour ago and notified me of it at the very least. So that's how new some things were. And of course, some things came out, you know, late in the fall, and we've included those. And yeah, it's, yeah. That's coming up tomorrow on YouTube. So let's see what else is going on, Steve.
Eh.
Oh man. We had a big free shipping over the weekend. So thanks to everybody that ordered. I think we got all the orders packed up today, but it's a federal holiday, so we didn't get anything in today, and it was difficult to ship anything today with that.
Right. They're boxed.
The new Shimano's. The Shimano Tranx Bs are out. So
that's
a
big deal.
Three of the four models last week, and the new comp raise might come in tomorrow, because I know we did get, we're invoiced for them, so that means they're in transit.
I hope they come in.
So you got to play with that. I have seen one in the shop, but I didn't get to fish with it, obviously, in the winter.
It's impressive.
And you gave it thumbs up. So
I did. I have, you know, I didn't get my hands on the new Tranx, and you know, it's I've hung out, I've played with the 300, you know, they're upgraded. Yep. 300. But I mean, that is the, you know, one of your standards there. And I mean, you know, they've upgraded the Cadillac. Can't go wrong there. You know, look, we got some more silver on the handle. Shiny. It's shiny, Jay. That's what I'm looking for. Now, it looks cool. I did throw that up. Did I talk about that last week, about that rod review? Maybe. I don't know. Doesn't matter. But, no, they were cool enough. Shimano sent me the new comp rays before they came out, and it's definitely a thumbs-up rod. If you're looking. And I got my hands, like I said, on the 9-footer and the 9.9, which is pretty cool stuff. So, absolutely.
What do you think about a 9-foot, 9-inch rod?
It's very similar to a 9.6.
Okay.
I got my Ace Frehley costume out and wore my high heels for it. Felt the same. I
had got three. All jacked up. Sure.
Right. Now, it's one of those deals. I think that's kind of the max that they could get at the shipping in the tubes. That's one thing, guys. If you want to learn something interesting, the difference, what is it, 86 inches, Jay, on shipping? Is that the magic number? Jody would know, but there's a magic number on a shipping tube where it goes from, oh, this cost you $100 to this costs $700.
Right? It's ridiculous.
Like, for real.
Yeah, there is. Yeah, there's a, right. There, yeah, it's like, what's 9 foot? I think the nine, uh-huh. How many inches 9 feet is. Yeah.
Yeah. It's like,
that's bad. Mm-hmm.
It's like if you went to the deli and you're like, I need a pound of ham, right? Oh, a pound of ham is $7.99. I need a pound and 1 ounce of ham. Sir, that is $63. It's like the jump will, like, you go,
it's
whoa.
It's the perfect analogy. Exactly.
Well,
that's
who,
exactly,
has not gotten mad over a pound of ham?
Oh, who doesn't get mad over ham in general?
I know, think about it. I know an entire religious group that gets mad over pork.
Okay.
Wow. Anyway. Jay.
Yeah, Steve.
How can there be an entire orchestra that's trans? I heard the ad for, never mind, the Trans-Siberian Orchestra. Anyway, we better get after it. We have a ton of Q&A to hear here. Let's get after it. Bill says, hey guys, do you use mono on your rigs for trolling with inline planer boards and set the boards to release the front clip when there's a hit, like a lot of people do with walleye or trout, salmon? Thanks. So Bill, the planer boards I'm running are the Blade. If you didn't know, you know now. I have, and I shouldn't say, okay. Jay, you ever do something, you go, you shouldn't do this. Don't attempt this. You're not a professional, right? What do they say, Jay? This is like you'll see a stunt on TV. Don't replicate at home. This is a professional.
Yeah, this stunt, right, was performed by professionals. Please don't attempt it or injure yourself in the process. Yeah, that type of thing. Yeah.
That's how I feel about trolling with mono, right?
Okay.
So a few weeks ago, yours truly was out trolling with 30-pound mono.
Really?
Yes. Now, let's talk about monofilament. Why would we do it? We shouldn't, but why would we? Because I'm not gonna sit here and roll around in a vat of hypocrisy. So I needed to get some baits down deep, right? That were what I would call, you know, we have the term busky, Jay.
Sure.
Walsky baits, right? So, I'm making it up on the fly here. So, like,
Want to get down them bottom feeders,
right?
Yeah,
I want to get walleye baits down to where I know there's some superbly negative and neutral muskies because we are in a bad front and nobody's happy, right? Some ninja trick stuff. Well, have you ever tried to troll a walleye bait on 80-pound braid? It ain't going your way, right? Not a happy place to be. So, when I'm in that scenario, I have to go with mono. Now, you know, some might say, why wouldn't you use, like, the power lock? Well, that's not going to really help this little Smith with Rogue or this Bandit, right? So, if you find yourself in a position where you're going to troll monofilament, you need to ensure that you have an appropriate bite guard, right? I don't even want to say a leader, because if you throw on a hunk of fluorocarbon, it kind of messes up some of these baits that run, you know. So if I got 30-pound mono on, I will probably be running like I was a few weeks ago, 40-pound straight wire, right? Now, this is old school. This is what we used to do. I'm comfortable with doing because that's what we did and that's how we did it. Now, don't go out and grab your catfishing rod and go trolling baits and try to pop one of these things, right? It's a professional stunt. But if you say you get in the way back machine, Jay, and you start looking up old musky tactics from back in the day, that was how it was done. You need to be very aware of the stretch of monofilament, how to set a drag with monofilament, and how to land a fish quickly if you're landing them on mono, right? Because you don't have the same muscle. It's a different animal, right?
There's a lot of stretch and there's a lot of diameter, yes.
Mm-hmm. Which is, you know, there, how many times have you heard of these guys that pop a muskie walleye fishing? It's endless, right? It's always.
Oh, sure. Yeah, yeah.
You know, Larry Knutson got one on the old Smithwick Rogue, you know.
Yeah, Tommy's nephew. Yeah.
Tommy's nephew. Got a good one over on Suckatobin.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
But with that being said, with great power comes great responsibility. And you need to be aware of those dynamics. So, I mean, I might as well get into it. If we're fishing with mono, right, we do not want to have monofilament on, say, a Muskie Shop shield rod trolling rod. Why? Because that rod has the give and the action for braid, right? You need the right action. You know, I'm actually, when I'm doing that, I'm rolling around with two old school rods. So I have the right rod, the right reels for it, and the right drag setting. So, yes, you could, Bill. You could. I don't recommend it, but heck, Jay, it's hard to tell how old Bill is, right? If his name was Jaden, I would know he's never trolled monofilament, right?
So, okay. Like, profiler.
Right. I'm profiling tonight. Braden and Jaden have never, but Bill, who knows? Bill might be older than I. So, but if I'm pulling planer boards, I'm generally never going to pull them on mono. Just too much signal chain. If I'm pulling any kind of monofilament anymore, I'm just straight basically walleye fishing for muskies. Right. That's kind of my motif. It's funny, man, not to go down the mono. And don't go by. If you've never done it, just don't do it. It's not worth it. But, you know, goodness gracious, could you get a Jake down deep back in the day? Right. You know, slapping a grandma. I mean, that's what we have. But the only merits of it for me are, you know, kind of the tenets of what I talk about trolling and kind of my philosophies in next level, right? I need the shortest amount of line possible for me to have the best contouring and control, right? So if I need a bait that small, that's a deep diving crankbait, what is the path of least resistance to get to my target depth at my target speed? That's why I'm doing it. So anyway, Jay.
Mm-hmm.
What do you know? All right, what we got here? Jeremy, this season coming will be my third season guiding fly fisherman on Lake of the Woods, Big Narrows area for reference. Steve,
young guy.
You've had fly guys that are dedicated to the craft. My question is, what areas would you be looking for while hiding from the wind? We do find fish up shove, but dinks are dinks and more difficult with the current areas are usually wind funnels. What would you do? Okay, what would you be looking for faced with these conditions? So let me reread that because we're talking flies. Sit my cram. The question is, looking for while hiding from the. So we're hiding from the wind and we're fishing on a fly. Our season runs from opener 2 months. I was a guide at Loch Sewell for 15 years before coming to the woods. We can catch the dang things on gear fishing the wind. It's torturous thing leaving fish to go look for fish because the wind and the. Okay, so. We have a neat, I love this. This is got me kicking. Okay. Things that are going to play. We have wind and we have flies, right? You might have done this already. If we're in, most of the time in your season, speed is not a thing. So, things that I do when I'm guiding on the fly and I'm confronted with wind, right? I look my clients dead in the eye and say, hey, how do you feel about a bait caster? So, and if they look at me back, Jared, that guy, if you're a guide, you got it, right? If you guide on the fly a little bit, you got it. Because you're like, please, can we just throw? Listen, we could catch 7 today if you would throw blades. Tease. But I'm in this scenario, and it's funny, and it's not going to be super in-depth on the fly fishing section, but I actually included fly fishing section in the new book I'm wrapping up here. And my methodologies have little to do with traditional musky fly fishing. I don't care. This is another delivery methodology. If I go, I don't care if I cast to them casting, trolling, or jigging, I'm lumping fly fishing into that. So it's like cast, troll, jig, fly. It's all the same, right? It's a methodology. But sometimes you have to force that realm, you know, that square peg in the round hole, if you will. So things I do when I'm confronted with the wind, you can get away with, and it might help you, because most of the time, if you don't have a good caster, even if you're fishing a floating fly, get an aggressive sink line on so you have better load and better weight, right? So mm-hmm. if you do have to fight that, you are going to be able to basically, if you think about if wind's an issue, you're fighting chop. What does it matter if we got a freaking, you know, a moderate sink line? You're going to shoot better. So it's most of your sinking lines have a better shooting head to them, which is going to increase your distance. Now, with that being said, if you're fighting those winds and you're fighting those narrows, and now we're fighting, you know, how we're doing it, a lot of that can be done with boat positioning, right? So with, let's say that we're in a narrows and we have wind, right? We always want that wind to our back, and you're going to have to get your guys to make one false cast, two false casts at most, because they're just, that fly is going to get caught in the wind if it's blowing, right? Which is just getting them to shoot it fast, which is hard to do. But if you're a fly guy, you know what I'm saying? Like, just get it going, right? Don't sit here and do this river run through it crap. Shoot it out there and be done. The other thing that you can do if wind is an issue, you know, you, if you know where these fish are and you're trying to get on them and you're fighting that wind, right, is you can actually, and this is just a cheat, is place the fly, feed the line, and drift, right? You don't have to always be stripping it and gathering line. It's almost like I talk about using my trolling motor to work, say, a suspending, like a Rachel or a Triple D. Why don't you just place the fly in the proximity of where you want to be and drift it? Get 30 feet out and just let the boat drift. And don't pick up line. Just tell them, snap it, strip it, sweep the rod a foot, let it hang, sweep the rod a foot, let it hang, and I'll do that down weed edges. Right? So if you got a rockhead or a weed edge, get your distance out, right? And then use the drift to take the fly. So you're no longer casting, you're actually just working the fly. Right? So that allows you to take out casts. The biggest problem in delivering the fly is the cast in a strong wind. So we're going to place the fly, strip the line out, and then drift. And now okay. Yep. your speed, you can dictate, if you're the guide, you're dictating the advancement speed. So, you know, you got to kind of play the wind and play the drift and play your trolling motor. And when you need to hold back, hold back. But you're just doing that and you go, okay, we went over, let's say you go over a weed bed, say weed and rock mix. Set yourself up, get the, let's say you got two guys. Put one guy in the back, put one guy in the nose. The guy in the back, say, I want you to put your fly out 40 feet behind the boat. Tell the guy in the nose of the boat, I want you to put your fly out 40 feet. Strip the line out. Get way ahead of what you're about to target. Let the wind do it. Get your guys out there and say, all right, strip them. But don't get, let the line go back out. Pull it or sweep the rod. So articulate the fly and let the line go back out. Don't collect the line. Let it surge back out. So that's your hang time. And now your job as a guide is to guide that boat over top section. So say we're going to have that shallow rock and weed combo. Go over that section. All right, guys, pull them up. We're going to go back to that, and we're going to hit the mid section and do the same thing. Right? Then we're going to go out, and we're doing that outside section. So you can deliver those baits in those presentations. You're just taking the false casts out and using the boat's drift to do so. And that's how I kind of overcome that. And the same thing can be done. Say you're fishing in narrows. You need to think, instead of casting into things, you need to use those drifts laterally. Right? So you might be insanely close to an edge. Say you got, say like a dude's got a 9 foot 10 weight or a 9 foot 11 weight, whatever. You might, if you're at a rock wall, you might be holding your boat 11 feet off that wall. And you better know it. If you're guiding, you better know it anyway, which is get that bait out there and have them jerking it. And then now we're delivering effectively as best as we can. That's cool. Yeah. If that makes any sense, you know,
mm-hmm. Yeah,
and
it does.
It's hard to cast a fly in a headwind, but you can do that. And like I said, the cool thing about most summer days and spring days, it's, you know, in the morning and the evening, the higher altitude winds are decoupling, you know, so you're always going to get that. But that's how you get through those grindy, windy days, is how I've done it, you know. And some guys are like, well, I'm not really casting. Well, you know what? You're not going to be able to do it anyway. So suck it up, buttercup. You know, what do you do, Jay? What do you do?
Cold fronts, man.
Get out the spears. Jude, hello. My name is Jude. I'm 12 years old and want some tips on tiger muskie. I've been trying for about 7 months in Utah and now have not gotten a single bite. One thing I've noticed is almost all of the muskie here are small. The biggest I've seen was probably 28 through 30. I'm mainly fishing from shore, but I do have an inflatable raft he's got a raft. He's getting a raft, it looks like. Any tips? So, Jude, Jay, it's a noble quest. This is a 12-year-old boy versus tiger muskie. I love it, right?
He's in a reservoir, did he say?
Oh, it's Utah. Yeah,
there's assuming.
Yeah, there's your reservoirs. So,
yeah, okay.
Thing I would do, tiger muskies, we got some bank fish and we got a little raft situation, right? So he's got some smaller fish, 28 to 30. It might be a stocker lake, right? So let's say this lake's been recently stocked. There's not a lot of big fish in there. We need to go with smaller baits in general, right? So 28 to 30 inch fish, let's think about some bass size baits, some big bass baits, like your rattle trap, right? That's a classic bass bait.
For sure, yeah.
Then you think about like a Joe Booker, like 5-inch shallow raider or a slammer, right? That's a hard plastic bait. You're going to be able to really work that bait from the edges.
Right? Rattle a husky jerk.
Mm-hmm, husky jerk. Or, you know, you got like a Titan Junior, which is a small, so you need to be looking at smaller baits.
Yeah.
And what I would look at, if I were you, I would throw a River Sea Whopper Plopper. I would throw like a slammer fatty minnow or a Joe Booker shallow raider. I would be throwing a Titan Junior. I'd be throwing a giant killer. And if that little combination doesn't do it, there's not much that will. So I would be throwing things that are in kind of the big bass bait size, the small musky bait size, if you got fish of that caliber. And, you know, the cool thing is this. Just make sure you're covering water. This time of year, those things are going to be adjacent to some deep water, right? So be in those areas where, you know, if you're from the bank, you need to be looking at a map at home or looking on a phone or looking somewhere and go, okay, is there a map of this lake? Where's some deep water? And fish the structure and possibly cover that's around that. And I think, Jay, I mean, right now you don't want to be throwing a topwater this time of year, right? But that combination, if you make enough cash, you're going to get a tiger, right?
I agree. Yep.
You know, that's
low percentage on the topwaters this time of year.
Well, yeah, sure. We don't want to be throwing topwater, but I'm saying for like that caliber of fish, 12-year-old angler, yeah, that's a pretty strong package right there. You're gonna get some eats. And, you know, Jay was once a 12-year-old musky angler, and it's a tough game. It takes a minute to, you know, be patient. You know, that's the most important thing you can do when you're starting out in the sport. You know, embrace the suck, as they say. You know, you're gonna have your good days, your bad days, and be willing to do that. But just keep throwing. Like I said, stick with those core sized baits or those simple baits. You know, some of the best things you can do. Watch. You know, all the whippersnappers, Jay, they love the YouTube. You know, get on there and watch some videos, whether it be Musky Shop videos or any other channel videos for some anglers that know what they're doing. And, you know, focus on retrieves. That's the biggest thing, is like, just because you bought the bait doesn't mean the bait's going to catch the fish. You have to use the bait appropriately.
Yeah, a lot of those baits require pauses, right. So make sure you're incorporating that. That's key.
That'll get you going there. You'll get you one, no doubt.
Mm-hmm.
No doubt. Jordan, Steve and Jay, in moving water, what are some tips for using the Lake X Toad? I have a couple and I haven't had a chance to throw them. Can you please help? Also, Jay, Jay, has Jay paid off his gambling debts? If not, I'll contribute as long as it doesn't go into pike whacking. Jay.
No, Steve covered that. It was, what, $38 or something like that, the total?
It was steep.
That was a couple years ago. Yeah, I'm good. I'm good.
He's good.
Thanks, though. I appreciate it.
We took an offering at the Muskie Shop Bash and sent Jay to rehab. So,
not true.
We can't stop him from pike whacking, though. You just can't stop.
Nope, won't nobody stop. Can stop that fury.
No, funny. That boy around town, he's just always a whacking the pike. Moving river and or moving water and the toad.
Moving water and toads. Okay.
we had a fly fishing guy, a 12-year-old, and now we got moving water and the toad. Is the toad still made, Jay?
I haven't seen any in a few years, but I'm not going to speak for Lake X Lures, but yeah, that's a play on words with Reloaded for all those out there that think Steve's insane.
From my voiceover days.
Yeah, that's right.
Fishing with Joe Booker is brought to you by Reloaded. You can't set the hook in deep space. Or no one hears you set the hook in deep space. Outer space. Whatever.
That was my favorite of all time.
Anyway, the toad. I was a toad aficionado until...
Yeah, tell them about that thing.
I love them. There's... The one thing I loved about the toad, I'm looking here on the rack of rubber here in the bait cave. I've still got a couple. The problem with my toads is I would throw them still, except for I don't have a complete one. I've got like a toad with one tail that's black. A toad, you know, maybe I could just... I'm too lazy and I have too many baits to sit here and hodgepodge together a toad. But
okay.
I use them a lot in shallow water. Not shallow water, but... You know, so like boats in 15, right? Or, you know, the whole water column, the deepest this, you know, river gets is 20, or, you know, it's a perfect setting in moving water. What I like about the toad is its ability to top load the toad, right? There was a little hack I came up with. There's an article on Muskie 360 about top loading the toad, where I'm taking the hooks off the bottom and I'm putting them on the top of the bait, making it great for working over snaggy timber, working off of shallow water, like hard bottoms where, you know, if you let it fall normally, it's just going to grab into the rocks or whatever, and every cast is a nightmare. Mm-hmm. The body of that thing is flat enough, and the way it falls, it didn't really affect the action if the hooks were just on top of the bait, which made it a deadly thing for... You know, there's a couple water rivers here at home I'm fishing or wherever. I always have one around where I'm like, that's awesome. Now, the timing of this happening when the toad was really happening is kind of that first. I feel like I'm on Antiques Roadshow. This is from the first tube style nouveau riche movement, Jay. Right? You know, you're like, but you're trying to find periods in time. Grandma Moses of tubes. But that presentation style of the jumping, right? Up, right. Let it fall. Yeah. Pop it, let it fall. Pop it, let it fall.
Yes. It's not a Medusa. Don't overwork it. Yeah. Even though it might look similar.
Right. And everybody got their hands on those in the very beginning when the toad first came out. And Jay was saying, why does everyone not get it? Or people, we were having to tell people in emails from the shop. I was having to say it on the podcast. I was having to respond to emails on the podcast. I bought a toad and all it does is spin around and roll over. That's because it wasn't meant to be ripped, you know, like a pull pause. It was a up and down motion, much like the way we'd work a Kraken or a Red October. So it is an alternative presentation in that space where, you know, if I'm in a, let's say I'm in a shallow river that runs 10 feet deep, even a shallow Kraken is going to be problematic because it's got the hooks on the bottom. I loved the toad because I went, I can make cover with shallow cover and structure without having to worry about it too dang much, right? That was what was cool about that bait. So I would put the hooks on the top, right? And actually, you know, it reminds me, I actually saw, let me check this real quick. I swear I saw an email about this or my email earlier this week. But check out that article. It's on the app. There's a search function somewhere. Just look for it. It'll give the app more clicks anyway, if you got to dig, Jay. So, hold on, it might be on my phone. I swear somebody emailed me at my guide service about this. Let me see.
About working a toad?
About something about toad-esque. It was a toad-esque request. Jay, say something. I don't need dead air here, folks. Let me look. I'm looking. Make sounds, Jay. Sounds, Jay, yeah. Now.
Yeah. Tell the old toad. The toad's made by Lake X Lures. And like I said, I don't think it's been a couple of years since anyone's seen any. So I don't know what his production status is. And I hope he brings it back and makes some. But, you know, he hasn't made a whole lot of hard baits either.
Mm-mm.
I guess we'll try to find out more. You know, he said not too long ago they had baits coming our way, but they didn't show up yet. So,
well, you know. Oh, there it is. I'll be danged. Robert emailed me. I was wondering if you could rig a Medusa with the hooks on top like you would rig a Lake X Toad. The only reason I'm asking, I can't find a Lake X Toad. He's a West Virginia creeker, and he says, thank you. Well, thank you, sir. So, one could rig a Medusa. Not a bad idea. You could. If I was going to do that, I would take an X-Acto knife and cut the fin off the top of the Medusa. Right? Because you're going to have a hook hanging off the side. The biggest thing when I was doing that with the toads is like centering it. Right? That will help you out a bunch. So, tonight on Toad Talk with Steve and Jay. They get extra toady. All right, Eric says, how do you decide what color lure to use and what water? Okay, how do you decide what color lures to use and what type of water clarity? And also, what lures do you use during sunny, cloudy days? And does the combination of water clarity with what weather it is that day affect the type of lure you use? I understand that's okay. So, Eric, that is a way overarching question, right, that is dictated by a tremendous amount of things. So let's say that we want to get this as succinct and simple as possible. So let's start with sunny and cloudy days, right? So you may have heard it before, musky anglers here, but bear with me. On a bright day, on a sunny day, Jay, we want what? Light and reflective colors, things that stand out against a blue background, right? On a dark and cloudy day, you're presented with a white background most of the time, which is the clouds, so we want a dark silhouette. So bright and sunny days, let's go simple, white. Cloudy days, black, right? Now, to the point of lure selection, what I'm going to get at is here. Color, you have some, that's your roughest baseline, you know, and I'd recommend, Eric, if you want to, I'm going to refer you to digging in and spend a little bit of time on the Musky 360 app, because we could sit here forever and still not answer all your questions. But go to the Musky 360 app and get on there, and there's a section under My 360, which is Musky Fishing 101, right? It covers color selection, and it covers all these topics, and I'd recommend it'll help you out a lot. Get in there and read up on that, and it's going to help you on that front. Because lure selection is not dictated only by weather. Lure selection is dictated by seasonality as well.
Sure, right? Sure, right.
So there's no, and I deal with this all the time on the boat, right? And at first you feel like you're being a jerk, because somebody will ask me a question, say, "Do muskies do this?" And I've learned it is far more important for me to look at people and say, that's a loaded question. And they go, huh? And then it's my job to explain and extrapolate on the point that it's a loaded question to go, you can't do, okay, let's start with something very basic, right? Do muskies eat top water? Well, yes, they do. However, that's a loaded question, because it's not, do they eat top water? It's, when is top water an appropriate presentation, right? So When is top water appropriate? Low light periods, cloudy days, right? When is top water appropriate seasonally? You see what I'm saying? It's a funneling effect of an answer.
Sure.
So it's not yes. The answer is never yes. Now, if you want to just be blasé, somebody will say, I'm trying to think of like very overly generalized questions. Do bulldogs catch muskies? Yes. Okay. That doesn't mean we should throw a bulldog from opener to closer. And it's not going to work every day. It's not that the lure catches the muskie. It's the lure shape, profile, and vibration, right? Triggers a fish to check it out if the proximity is correct. And this, the way we know the proximity is correct by understanding seasonality, right? And it's just this hierarchy of things. So dig into that, Eric. That'll help you out a little bit there without it getting down to too wild and ruckus and I'm going a four-day tirade. Sean, I fish a big lake connected to the Great Lakes and it's all connected to a large river system feeding into it. Do you guys think muskies will move in and out of those systems to different parts of the year if they're native or do they stay in a lake? So, you know, are muskies moving around if we have a river system and, you know, got a lake connected to a river? Absolutely. Absolutely. Muskies are a transient fish. All right. Again, there's never, this goes back to almost the premise I was explaining there. So the answer is yes. Right. And how do I put this? Okay. The answer to that question is yes. Now, we have a yes. What do we do with that yes, Jay? If you get if the answer to a question you ask is a yes, taking a yes without further critical thinking leads to negative results. Okay, let's see. And this is just the thought process. Hell, this is how I fish. But okay, do we have a yes? Yes, we have a yes. So that is correct. It's affirmative. When do they do it? Why do they do it? What conditions would lead them to do it? How far will they travel? What conditions influence their travel distance? Is it forage? Is it weather? Is it current, rate, and flow? So every yes in muskie fishing is a doorway to a litany of other questions.
Yeah, seasonality, water temperature, absolutely.
Right. Year class, forage, there's so much. And, mm-hmm. and there's always, that's the danger. Oh, hell, I'm going down the rabbit hole. I've been fighting it all day. I've just been rambling today. And this is overarching. I don't care. It's funny because some of these questions, you know, the last couple, and I appreciate them. I'm so glad it's awesome to me because I'm looking at the questions we got this week. We got a guy that's guiding muskies on the fly, which is like top tier crazy level. And we got guys going, how do I catch my first one? Right. Everybody is at a different place in their journey, which is awesome. That's what makes the sport so cool, and that's what I love about it. But I don't care where you're at. If you've caught 30,000 muskies, or you've caught three, or you've caught zero, right? The biggest thing that if you could ever take anything that I tell you and apply it to catching more muskies is critical thinking, period. You know, and I'm putting the polishes, Jay. I told Jay, I actually said on the podcast, I had gotten done with Next Level 2. I wanted to do something dramatically different. You know, just because you finish, I do this stuff because I love it. I was like, okay, I've got to do something which is like more thought process. And I've really kind of dialed in my own thinking, which is the critical thought process. Critical thinking is far more important than lure selection. I am to the point, guys, where, you know, and to answer this, and it's a slight caveat, people ask me sometimes, like, you know, hey, you've got new lures out. Like, okay, I've got Critter, Menace, and Banshee coming out here very shortly, right? Three new baits. And they're like, are you doing this bait? Are you doing that bait? Even the bait designs right now are to solve the problem of proximity. So I need action at proximity, at profile, and all this, right? And I've even dialed in now my thinking, or the way I'm thinking, in the last 4 or 5 years by looking at this and going, it doesn't matter. When I say you could catch them on a ham sandwich if they're hot enough, they're not scrutinizing things, right? And so, like, the way I'm making my lure choices, the critical thinking of that matter is, does it hit the target depth that I need to hit, and does it match the overall profile of the forage in this basin? That will get you most of the way there. And most people aren't thinking that way. Most people are going, does this bait work? Is the Jay, you've been asked a billion times in the store, is this a good bait? Sure.
Yeah.
Because to someone that is not thinking, you know, to a hammer, every problem is a nail.
Yeah, time and place, buddy. You know, you can't drill that home enough. You know, it's this is where it'll be good. Yeah.
That is why, you know, and there was an email I read earlier today before we even did the show about bucktails, right? And the reason I don't sit here and hammer bucktails is not because I don't throw them. I throw bucktails. But not every problem is a nail, right? You can't approach this and go, bucktail work, bucktail good, right? The worst bait on planet Earth right now is a Poe's giant jackpot for muskies right now in January. Worst bait you get on, right? I'm not going to catch one on a Poe's giant jackpot anytime soon, right? So is it a good bait? Applicationally, it is. You see what I'm saying? It's a tool. And I'm talking about these things are tools. They're situational tools. And when you go, does this bait catch fish? If you use it appropriately, you know, and that's the thought process. And then the rest of it is the baits are not the exciting part. The critical thinking regarding patterning is far more exciting, because once you know where they're at, and you've done diligent patterning, and you've put aside what you want it to be, and you've observed enough to realize what it is, the vast majority of the time, the bait is immaterial. And I'm a guy that makes a living selling baits.
Well, right? You're absolutely right, though. Yeah.
It doesn't matter.
I agree.
How do you go from, well, last year you were smoking them on this, and now you're smoking them on that? Because I can get that bait in front of them. Doesn't matter to me. It's for me as a lure designer, I'm coming up with things that I'm trying to make it basically dummy proof that somebody's going to get it where it needs to be, whether they know it or not. And so from my standpoint, like I said, the number one most important thing right now is proximity. I'm watching Fish J on scope where there's a freaking, whether it be a sucker, whether it be another bait that is 10 feet from them, right? They don't even perceive it. And I think the hardest thing is, like, once you get over that hump of bucktail topwater good, you start going, okay, I don't know much. The less that you've got to realize we don't know much about these things. And then you start being a student of the situation or a student of your environment, or at least an attentive observer. And it comes down to, like, you know, there's some people that are just not going to do it. Is critical thinking fun? No, most people fail at critical thinking, period. But that's the biggest thing I can give you.
Try to practice it. Just try to incorporate it, as painful as it might be to start out. Because when you do succeed, when you do all of a sudden put two and two together and go, you know, I need to be doing this right now. I am not throwing the appropriate thing at the right tempo and the right, you know, I'm not in the right depth. I'm not, you know, this isn't, it's got to be this, that, the other thing a little bit differently. And you do that and you succeed. It's really rewarding.
Yeah. I mean, this is not to, I'm not trying to go, hoo-hoo, look what I did, but I can only use my experience as an example, right? I mean, twice this week I've called my shot within 10 minutes. That's a good feeling. That's not every day.
There's a good feeling, no doubt about it.
And I'm not saying I'm calling it in the moment. I'm calling it. I'll say, all right, meet me at this time, and I'll get the ramp. And these are people that I know, you know. And I've fished with a bunch. I'll be like, all right, You know, this is the time. And, you know, you get it and we get the excitement in the boat and, you know, everybody's all stoked. And I'll get, you know, everything dies, I'll look at that and I'll just hold my phone up and I'll show you the timestamp on the photo. And you go, yep, there you got something. You know what I'm saying? That, and it's, you don't have to do that, but you can. And I'm not dialed in that much all the time. Do not get me wrong. That would be complete and utter bullshit to say I'm always dialed that in. You can get that dialed in at times. I guess the goal is to stay that dialed in, and I fluctuate in and out of it, right? I don't know anybody that ever has or anybody that ever will, you know, that you're fishing at that high of a level at all times. You try, you know, and that's the goal, you know, but like I said, the looking at things is every question is a deeper question. That's the most important thing you can do instead of going, what good? I mean, Jay lives it. I live it every day. 99.9% of your competition on the water goes, what bucktail's catching them? What's the hot bait? Okay. Mm-hmm. Cool. What's the hot bait? I mean, doesn't matter. What's the hot bait? You know what I'm saying? I mean, give me a swimming Joe, right? I'll smoke them on a swimming Joe. Give me a, you see what I'm saying? And something got to realize, and I'm way down the rabbit hole, but just something for somebody to always consider. And this is like a turning point in my head. And it's like, I'm trying to point you in the direction of, you know, take what you know and grow from there, which is you look at, you always hear the thing, Jay, of like, there's multiple patterns, right? There's always multiple patterns. There's all muskies are always doing multiple things, right?
Yeah. Yep.
We go, well, this is all I got. And I've been there. It's like, okay, I'm in a John boat, or hey, I'm a kid and I'm broke, or I'm just starting out guiding. I didn't have 5,000 lures hanging in my garage, right? Okay, this is what I got. Okay, there's multiple patterns. These are the baits that I have. What's the most accessible pattern that could theoretically be happening? Because you had a lot less, right? You had way less tools. And I mean, thinking that way opposed to going, what's the hot bait? The hot bait this year is Critter Menace and Banshee from Livingston Lures by Two.
See them live on Jay's new video at noon tomorrow, Tuesday on YouTube. Be the first.
Tune in for more bucktail secrets.
You know what, Steve? A guy called today. Mm. Really nice guy. Calls and he was asking about, he told me where he was going, when he was going.
Uh-huh.
He's a fisherman, but he really wants to try musky fishing. He's doing a week-long trip, blah, blah, blah. He told me where he's going. I'm like, email me that and I will send you back links and some more information. And he did. And it's just like, I felt really good about it. Cause I'm like, you know, he wanted five lures. And yeah. I'm like, I got him into five lures for this particular lake on this week. And I guarantee they're going to work for him. And it was like, oh, it's pumped.
Yeah.
You know,
and
it's like, I think I helped him out. He was, he was brave enough just to ask for help. Mm-hmm. He's just like, I haven't done this. Could you help me? Absolutely, I can help you. Yeah, I think this is going to be perfect for where you're going. And it's like, I'm confident now that guy is going to have a great trip and probably be like, this is fun. I want to get more into it, you know? I want to do it again. So well, anyway, yeah. Little story from shop today.
Well, screw them. It's awesome. I mean, that's what it's about. I mean, you know, you got to help people for sure. But I mean, it's one of those things. You know, I'll get off my soapbox on the line of thinking here.
Yeah, because I'm just saying, you know, he could have talked to somebody else or seen something online somewhere on social maybe or something, and just based on his own observations of what he's been hearing mm-hmm. about the sport, he could have, you know, gotten five lures that would have been like, you know, he would have gotten five top lures for the, you know, the first week of June and, you know, and gone out there and really not done well, or just, right. You know what I mean? Just, you could be steered in the wrong direction of probabilities. And that's, I don't know. That's the game you got to play sometimes. So that's part about the critical thinking.
Yeah, absolutely. Well, we got here. Hunter, hello, Stephen J. What are three things I can do to separate myself from others on high pressure clear water, about 10 plus feet of visibility, central Minnesota, to get more action? I see them porpoising all the time early mornings, but never a fall or a bite shallow, mid or deep. So,
Short shorts.
Short shorts. I don't know what that means, but I like it.
Well, you have to listen to his question again, Steve, to understand it fully. He wants to stand out and get a better action.
Oh, thanks, Gramps.
Whatever.
Anyway, things that we can do in pressure water to stand out. So, get out at night.
Yeah.
The number one thing you can do on pressure water is get on the night bite. Right? So, that's going to be important. What I would always do, and what I recommend, is what is everybody else throwing, right? And do something different. That's number two. So, let's say that we're on Lake Succotoban. It's high pressure. And
everybody's throwing bucktails.
Everybody's throwing bucktails.
High in the water. Right. Fast and high in the water column. Yeah. Yep.
That's number two. If they're throwing bucktails, I'm doing something different. And to the point of this, and to the doing things different, or just let's just do another critical thinking experiment, shall we? How many people do you know that throw bucktails all the time, and how many of them have caught the fish that they've dreamed of? Not many. Right? If everyone is doing the same thing and having similar results that are, and again, it's everybody, choose your own adventure. What do you want to do here, right? If you just want to catch one, that's one thing. Or if you want to try, I don't even know what the hell I'm trying to do anymore, but I just want to be as good as I can be. Those are different things. But, you know, like if I'm looking at everyone else and I'm going, wow, every time you're in line, Jay, here's a great analogy, right? We're all in line. And we're all lined up marching towards the wood chipper. And you go, wow, that guy 10 feet in front of me just got chopped to bits. But I'm going to stay in line and do what everybody else is doing. And then you're surprised you were chopped to bits when it was your turn to jump in the wood chipper. That's just, you know what I'm saying?
Should have left it to the professionals, Steve.
Everybody is throwing bucktails and got their butts whipped. But here, I'll be different. It'll be my chance because magically, I'll run into the one fish that is where it should be, whatever. And it's not knocking bucktails. Everybody can be throwing freaking krakens and have the same result. If you're fishing, you can't catch them when you're fishing under them. You can't fish. So many things.
Just an example. You're right.
Right. So we want to do something different, though, on pressure waters. Because I'm not going to make the assumption. I talk to Dr. Bob all the time. I'm not going to make the assumption that I'm going to row into some highly pressure Minnesota lake and I magically have the bucktail of all bucktails. And I'm the bucktail master. And I got it. Nobody else has it. I got it. No, you don't, right? You don't. You don't have a magic bucktail. So do something different. So I would go night fishing. I would do something different from a presentation standpoint. And third, and I think the most important, is on the highest pressure days, the best thing you can do is stop fishing and drive around that lake and go, where is everybody else fishing? Right? And you go, all right, hear me out. It's not about finding where, it's not fishing where they're fishing. Pay attention to where they're fishing and then go, where are they not fishing?
Yeah.
Right? And your job now is to find tiny features in the spot on spot and deep structures and a deep hump that never gets hit. Or this area, people aren't paying attention to this because, you know, everybody's over there on Ricky's weed bed. That's where they want to be. Old Lester Knutson caught him a 47 3 years ago over on Ricky's weed bed. We better beat the shit out of that till there's not a weed left. Right? Or, you know, somebody saw a YouTube video from 2 years ago and they caught a big one up on whatever. Okay. That's burnt. And that's the modern world we're in now. I mean, it's like there's no secrets until you find secrets of your own. Which is, okay, if we're fishing things that no one else is paying, and it might, dude, trust me, on some of this highly pressured water, you might find something you think is a secret that 30 other guys know, but the vast majority doesn't know, right? And so I'm going to get away from where the masses are fishing. I'm going to get away from what the masses are throwing, and I'm going to fish at different times than they're all throwing, because at a certain point, muskies go, here's these whirling blades over my head, and I shouldn't eat that. That's a negative experience for me, or it's a risk. Okay. And then,
or they're flat out not even close, right, proximity wise to that type of presentation. Right.
And they let their guard down, and some of these bigger, smarter fish, and Minnesota is a prime example of a lot of big fish getting caught at dark, right? Those fish know better than be up there and chasing things. Their guard's down. They can't see your bait as well, so you might be able to catch them on blades because they don't even, the negative perception of what it is changed the vibrational profile, whatever it means. The only other point I make in pressured water is that first turn of your figure eight is critical. Critical. Where others make mistakes, you cannot make mistakes. You have to execute perfectly. There's no, doing a lazy one, because you might have one shot at one fish and now you need to execute it all times. Now,
agreed.
That's it. So you don't get mulligans. We're over on Wildcat. Well, Jay screwed up on the first 17 that came in, but he got the next 12.
Not likely.
Right? Yeah, you know what I'm saying? there's double digit days on some crap in the North Woods. It's like whatever, but it's like one of those scenarios where you can't, if you're throwing baits, you got to be dialed. Wowzers. What else we got here? JSE writes.
Really? Did I? Wrong email.
I live at a bus stop. That's all it says. It just says, I live at a bus stop with this.
I didn't even sign it. That's all I said. Huh.
Okay. Dave, a few weeks ago, you were talking about making your own leaders. I've made some with the Dubro. Is Dubro? Dubro? Dubstep?
Dubro.
Dubro? No, sure. Is this French? Dubro. I've made some with the Dubro quick twist tool that makes a barrel wrap. I've made a couple of 140-pound and 124-pound that eventually snapped at the barrel wrap, resulting in a lost lure. Luckily, not a lost fish. My question is, are there some advantage to a haywire twist? The other Dubro tools makes a haywire twist above the barrel twist. Thanks. So, here's how I'm going to give you guys a trick. Here's how, for years, before I was, fortunate enough to have any help with any gear, every leader on my boat was AFW tooth proof, right? Because as a guide and you're broke, you could buy a spool of it for, I believe at that time, $1.19. Right? Jay, how much is it now, even? It's like $3, right?
Not much more.
Right? So $1.19.
Inexpensive, it's solid wire, right, leader, single strand, solid.
And
easy
not,
to use.
I never had one break. And I had literally a piece of just board and two finished nails 12 inches apart. Take your wire, wrap it around one end and wrap it around the other end, and that would take vice grips and just twist it around.
No, yeah, sure.
That's
okay.
It. If I had three wraps around itself, nice, clean, and tight, and cut off the tag end so it wasn't a sharp edge, I never had one break. I've seen guys doing haywire twist. I've seen guys doing this. I've seen guys doing that. Keep it simple. It's not going to break. One thing with straight wire leaders is, you want to make sure, because after a while you can get impact points, right? If you have, say, you got a swivel or you've got snaps or whatever, they can get damaged right where that's continually hitting. You're going to have a contact point between your swivel and a contact point between your snap. So you want to be careful of that. As cheap as that stuff is, the way I would do it back in the day, we'd fish our day. I'd spend all the, Jay, I was trying to save myself 11 cents. I'd bend, somebody get snagged and I'd stand there and bend it back straight enough for Jazz, you know?
Oh yeah, been there.
Yeah. Like, oh, that'll be, oh, you know, I want to save myself the 11 cents of giving the guy another one. It's just a simple twist around it. I mean, I've seen guys overcomplicate. This is such a simple thing. Don't overcomplicate it. A board with nails, vice grips, wrap it around, be done. That'll save you a lot of heartache and questioning what kind of twists. Dan from Slimelander. Greetings from the cold white north of Slimelander. I just purchased a few new rods, 9.5 and a 10 foot. What is the best way to net a fish solo fishing? Love the pod, GNC. What we got? He says, well, there's my contact is dry. He just signed off. Damn. So we got a 9.5 and we got a 10 footer. Well, what you have to do solo netting is you can't get that. You know, what I'm trying to get people to do is get that leader pretty dang close to the rod trip when you're dragging him in, right? Mm-hmm. You've got to do the upward rod angle when you're solo netting. So you got rod in one hand, net in the other. Now, with a longer rod, let's say you have the rod in the air, right? And we got a 10-foot rod and the fish to the... So you've got basically rod length, boat gunnel height, leader length to the water surface from the rod tip if it's up at a high angle. So what you need to do is get that fish coming in straight with the rod under your, with the net position under your arm where you can get it, pull it in, and then just pull that rod backwards, right? Because with these longer rods, man, it is problematic because if that fish makes a left or a right, he's got way more line out than he had when you had a 7.6 or an 8-footer, right? And it can cause
you can choke up on it too.
Right. With this, when I'm doing it, I have literally done better of just pulling back. I've like netted a lot of fish by holding it about the first eye of the rod.
Yeah.
I mean, just pull it back. Just pull the rod straight in. I mean, especially if it's a feisty one. One of the keys a lot of times with solo netting, you got to play that fish down a little bit more. And
yeah, I agree.
That's a negative.
Well, but an advantage to a longer rod too, there's more shock absorption. So there's more, right. You know, even if you choke up and you don't have your hands per se on the reel, you're going to have time to react and get back on the game.
That just put the line in your teeth like a man, just pull it. Now, I mean, like I said, it just makes for a bad equation of you have far more line out and that allows that fish, that high rod angle allows tremendous amount of lateral movement for that fish. Pointed straight at him and choked up on it, he has less side-to-side movement. So unless that thing's coming in with a kit, and I'm going to choke up and just pull that rod back. So net out, rod back, right? To the best of my ability, if that makes sense. Jay?
Mm-hmm.
What size musky shop beanie would you recommend for a 63-year-old high school graduate?
Probably an extra large.
You know, extra. What is he? Is he Polish? Triple X.
One size fits all, Steve,
one
by the way.
One size fits all.
How no big, fits most.
The guy's got the biggest head I've ever seen. You know, whatever. God, we've had some doozies and we've had some woozy questions today. So, Jaybird, what is going on next week? Anything at the Musky Shop? Is there any more sales? I know
we might have something cool coming later this week. So, keep an eye out on social. We'll make an announcement. We might have a little special coming. So, that's all I'll say right now.
Well. What do you know? Anyway, Jaybird, say good night, folks. Tune in for Jay's annual reaping of the new baits this week. Jaybird, say it.
Thanks,
say
Steve.
The line, Sheil. Good night.
Night, guys.